Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So that was kind of a mess. The Oilers rookies just stomped Grant, McEwen, Nate, all-stars, combined team 9-1. Shots were 68-16. The game was a bit of a travesty, honestly. It was like I coach minor hockey, Bruce, and at the start of the year, you get teams mis-tiered, and there's all these games, like there's often games 15-1 or 8-1 or 9-1, and that's what that reminded me of. Two teams that were missed, just not the same level of competition.
Right.
And it didn't make for a good game for the fans, and I'm sure for the maybe the Oilers players and their parents enjoyed it, and the coaches might have, but the boy, Nate McEwen, they that was a tough night for them.
Well, it makes it really hard to judge what in the heck you got out there when you're playing against a, you know, another level of opponent. Like the old games against the University of Alberta, whatever else, they were playing against the top program in the country for starters. But also, they were playing against a single team that had a, you know, single team concept that stayed consistent from year to year, and they usually had, you know, 15 or more returning players. Plus new guys that were learning that system, not two teams from two systems that are like arch rivals with each other. And I mean, you got one team, half the team wearing blue sweaters and half the team wearing purple sweaters. And it looked about as coordinated as that.
I think all of the teams should have been waving a white flag after the second period.
Well, and 68 shots. Yeah. Was it to 16? I know when it was 4-0, the Oilers had 4 goals and the other guys had 4 shots. It was 33-4. 33-4. And, you know, it was, and I mean, in defense of the Nate McEwen guys, because, you know, I don't want to shit on them particularly, but apparently they had a hard schedule of their own on the weekend. And then they had to come and get together with sort of one day's practice together and try and get ready for this game at Rogers Palace. You know, that's a tough ask for those guys. And tonight, at least, they just weren't up to the task.
So I don't know what the beef is between the U of A and the Oilers, but if there's anyone within the Oilers organization that kind of speaks truth to power occasionally, someone's going to tell Cates, like, solve this, figure this out, get this the great U of A Oilers rookie rivalry going again. Mm-hmm. The fans really love that game. People of Edmonton love that game. And it's a much more competitive game for your team. You get a much better sense of the players on the Oilers rookies team because you give, like, I don't know what to write about that game. I'm doing the not game grades, but it's like, I mean, it was just
I'm glad you got this one. I would be in the same boat. And I just sort of, what's the takeaway from that? And I mean, as you mentioned, the Golden Bears. Of course, I'm a Golden Bears fan myself. But this was the one game a year where I would literally go and root for both teams. And so I'm a little bit bitter about the Bears not playing. So just to give you where I'm coming from. But the Bears actually led the series. I think it was 13 games to 11. The Oilers had outscored him by a handful of goals. I mean, the games were usually close. They had some carryover from year to year in that they would have some of the same players back on both teams. And there was, you know, that the level was, it seemed to be just right where you had one sort of team playing like a team playing against a bunch of hotshots. It was like when Canada goes over to the World Championships or the World Juniors and their first game or two, they're just coming together as a team and they're playing, you know, maybe a second division country, but that team is a national team and they're used to playing together. And it was that kind of, where was it, you know, at least a level ice surface. Well, tonight it was anything but. It was just a rollover.
Yeah, the only time I like to see that kind of blowout, Bruce, is when the Oilers play the actual Calgary Flames.
From the Flames, I remember that time we beat the Flames 10-1, and I think it was 1995, and the Oilers weren't even any good that year, but they sure pounded the Flames that one time. And it was kind of like that.
So let's move on, Bruce. There was some interesting news earlier this week. TSN's Bob McKenzie's came out with his preseason take on every Canadian team. I didn't listen to the other ones, but he pulled no punches in talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Here's what McKenzie had to say essentially. He said it's the same basic group that fell on its face last year that will be tasked with cleaning up their own mess of a year ago. I think the way most people look at it, every year you have a Connor McDavid-led team that misses the playoffs. That is a crime against hockey humanity. I think that would be especially true after this season, after they didn't do it last season. I mean, McDavid's game is on its own level, and it would be absolutely criminal if the Edmonton Oilers cannot find a way to surround him with enough talent to get his team back into the playoffs. So what did you make of that comment, Bruce?
It was a little harsh coming from Bob. I mean, he's usually pretty measured in his comments. And all that said, I mean, there's not really anything there that I disagree with. Just he really got straight to the point. But he did have, you know, he did use a little bit stronger words. I think he called it criminal at one point and crime against humanity at another point. You know, that's those are strong words. But I mean, he's right. If they put together another stinker of a season on top of last one, it's a full-fledged disaster.
Yeah, it was a little bit purple prose, just slightly over the top in terms of the critique. But I who can quibble with it? I mean, on a certain level, he's right. It's not any kind of real tragedy if the Oilers don't make the playoffs again in any sense. It's just pro sports. That said. They've got to make the playoffs this year. I think his real point was this, that if they don't make the playoffs, people are going to get fired.
Oh, yeah.
Starting with Shirelli and McClellan, and that's completely fair. I mean, if the Oilers aren't in a playoff spot by December 1st, I think McClellan should be fired, unless there's real extenuating circumstances, unless they're just like a point out or something. Because, right. I mean, I wasn't making the argument, but I was certainly thinking hard last year at the end of November, when the Oilers weren't in the playoff, and they should have maybe tried to change the coach to see if anything would shake them out of them, get it going, you know, because this is true. McDavid is on this team. It should be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The good news, Bruce, is I really think that they're going to be in playoff running this year. Teams that have superstar players like this. I mean, it took a long time for Merrill Lemieux's Pittsburgh Penguins to get it together, but this team has considerably more talent around McDavid already than Lemieux's early teams had around him. If Cam Talbot is league average through the first few months of the season, and if Klefbom, Larson, and Nurse are all healthy, and everyone else is kind of healthy, this team should be in the playoff race, yeah, definitely. Because you just need a bit of goaltending and some good health, and
if the rest
they got
the team,
Connor McDavid.
The rest of the team is average. McDavid's going to win some games for you. Exactly. And the thing is, if you have that kind of player, he should lift the rest of the team so they're above average. I mean, we've seen that with so many superstars, where the whole level of the team rose with that guy. And you know, I can think back, of course, to young Bobby Orr breaking into the league, and by year four for him, he was winning the Hart Trophy and the Stanley Cup. His team came along for the ride. Or of course, young Wayne Gretzky making it right away, but his team coming along with him in a couple of years' time. And Merrill Lemieux, you mentioned, took him a little bit longer. I think it was his fifth year before the Penguins made the playoffs and the seventh year before they won the Cup, but they became a very dominant team, and he just raised the level of the conversation. And Sid, same thing. He came onto a last place team, right? And they won the Cup in his fourth year. So now we're at about that point in McDavid's career, and you'd like to think the Oilers need to be turning that corner. There's lots of questions about the personnel, but I think the power of McDavid is understated and underrated by some.
I think they took a huge step last year when they finally put RNH on McDavid's wing, because I think that is the right combination. I think it's going to work this year. So the McDavid line, I think, should just get going right out of the hop. They've got that figured out. Even if it's not Ratty, whoever it is, Aberg, Ratty, Puljujarvi, Yamamoto, whoever's on the other wing, jeez, the fact that they have RNH and McDavid working together allows then Draisaitl to lead the second line. And I think Draisaitl's shown he's fully capable of that. Certainly showed it in the 27 playoffs when he was a dominant center in the playoffs against some tough competition in Anaheim. So Drysdale's ready to step up. So I think there's one big question on the forward lines. Who's going to be Drysdale's attacking wing? Who's going to be his version of RNH? Who's going to fit in with Drysdale on that wing and be kind of his partner in crime on the attack? But there's a couple really good candidates in Puljujärvi and Yamamoto who are a year older this year, and they both have incredible offensive talent. So it's not like the cupboard's bare. There's no one there. It's just a couple of young players who show every indication in the world, to me at least, of having the talent to be strong attacking NHLers. One of them's got to do it. So I don't mind that bet. And then it's, again, as I say, it's Talbot in net. Can he get the job done? And he's got a career 919 save percentage, so it's not a terrible bet. And you're left with the defense. Whether are real question marks, I think it's fair to say. But
well, it's a big question right now, of course, hanging over the contract status of Darnell Nurse that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Bruce. You wrote a post on that today. I don't know if you have that post up, but what are people saying? Because both McKenzie and Bob Stauffer, I have the post in front of me, or do you have it? Do you want to go through it? What they said?
Yeah, I can go through it in about a half a minute here.
How about this? I'll start with McKenzie's comments, and then you can pick it up with what Stauffer said. Yep. So in his McKenzie said, he started off by saying, by all accounts, Nurse's contract negotiations are not going well. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But big picture, assuming he's back, they're expecting some significant top 4 minutes from him. Now, that was the first indication. We've been hearing from Stauffer all summer that not to worry. And from other sources too, other plugged in sources, not to worry. Nurse is going to sign a 2-year bridge deal and don't worry about that. McKenzie followed that up with a tweet where he kind of backed off. Not going well at all, just a little bit, I think. And he said, probably should have added, and this is true of all RFAs, especially those who end up getting bridge deals after realizing vast gulf on long-term valuation, and that will be Nurse. They almost always get done, just a matter of timing and how close to season opener. Right. So that was a sober second thought from McKenzie, as we've come to expect from McKenzie, probably the most sober observer of NHL hockey that you'll find. So what did Stauffer say today, Bruce?
Okay, well, Stauffer referenced the McKenzie comments and the tweet, and he said, Darnell Nurse, most likely scenario, a 2-year bridge deal, represented by Anton Thun.
Tuna fish. I don't know.
Who at times has challenged the management teams of respective NHL organizations. Would fit his job as an agent.
Yeah.
Stauffer again. It's my belief that we'll see Darnell Nurse in Oilers lineup when they open up in Gothenburg, Sweden. But I certainly felt earlier this summer that there would be no reason to believe he wouldn't be at the start of training camp. That is now a possibility. He might not be at the start of training camp, given the fact we're 2 days away from that happening. Do I believe he'll play the majority of the season with the Oilers? Absolutely. Do I believe the Oilers organization respects what Darnell Nurse has? Yes. The fact of the matter is, in this situation, the Oilers hold the upper hand because Nurse does not have arbitration rights, so it's prudent upon the team to deal with the player in that situation. We'll see where it goes. Do I see a scenario like Jacob Trouba, where Trouba missed a significant amount of games to start the year? This was in 2016. No, I don't see that. I think Nurse knows he's part of the leadership core. I don't know what he's saying about Jacob Trouba there, but there will be maybe a divide still left to conquer on that front before things get totally consummated. That's the nature of relationships and deals like this. So,
what he's saying about Trouba, Bruce, is Trouba, the rumor was that Trouba actually wanted out of Winnipeg at that time. So he wasn't seeing him. Trouba wasn't seeing himself as part of the leadership group of that team at that time. He wasn't even actually seeing part of that team at all. I think Nurse, I'm still not that worried about this. Like, I know people, does he want out of Edmonton? I just don't buy that at all. I just see this as it's a negotiation. They're grinding it out. The agent's got to prove his reputation. This is the agent's Stanley Cup playoffs, right? Like he's got to come through. But I also see Nurse as someone who, everything he said, I mean, he's in Edmonton again, he's practicing with the team, he's in Edmonton. He says he badly wants the sign, I think. I mean, I don't think he says he badly wants, but he's made it clear he really wants to be part of this team, he wants to sign. I think it's going to happen, and I'm not going to get that worried about it and until the game one, I guess, until they head to Europe. If you're not on the plane heading to Europe, then I'll be a little bit worried.
Well, Trouba held out until November 7th, and then he signed a 2-year bridge deal of $6 million with 2.5 in the first year and 3.5 in the second, and that's significant in that the second year makes what they call the platform for the qualifying offer at the end of the contract. And that's what we actually just saw with Ryan Strome, where he came here with a $2.5 million cap hit, but his 2-year deal actually said $2 million the first year, $3 million the next. So last summer, when his contract expired, the Oilers had to offer the full $3 million just to qualify him. And then he wound up getting just over $3 million. And so maybe that's one way they can bridge the gap is to offer a slightly unbalanced contract with a bigger contract at the second end to ensure the starting level negotiations next time is a little bit higher. That said, in Nurse's case, I'm pretty sure he's looking for the home run next time around. So if they gave him 2.5 and 3.5 like Trouba got, well, his next ask is probably going to be 5 plus anyways, right? So that's his camp might be holding out for 1 year, and after which they do have arbitration rights and they can play a little more serious hardball right away next summer. So that's one thing. And the other alternative, I guess, is a long-term deal that has to get worked around the Andre Sekera long-term injured reserve finagling that the team's going to have to do to max out the amount of cap space they get from that.
So there was one other development this week, Bruce. The Oilers signed another tryout contract with Alex Chiasson, and I've seen him over the years a number of times, both watching minor league hockey and NHL hockey. And big, fast, tall, rangy, fourth line, aggressive winger. Not much of a scorer, but just he's like not Matt Hendricks low levels though. Kind of An interesting guy coming into training camp. And again, the way that they're stacking up on wingers, Bruce, with Scotty Upshall on a PTO, now Chiasson on a PTO, just makes me think again that they may be looking at moving out a winger, someone like Zach Cassian or Drake Caggiula in a trade, maybe to Carolina for Justin Falk. This is the hotly rumored, buzzed about deal in Edmonton. And the Chiasson thing certainly adds fuel to that fire.
Yeah, I actually, when I wrote this Chiasson signing up yesterday, I looked at him and I compared him to Zach Cassian, and they were stunningly similar. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to find two guys that were as similar as those two in terms of their age, their height and weight, their games played, their ice time, goals, assists, points, plus-minus, right across the board, right up to penalty minutes, and that's where Cassian hugely separates from the pack with 614 minutes to 222 for Chiasson. Now, if you value penalty minutes, then that makes Cassian more valuable. If you see penalty minutes as a double-edged sword, that, you know, there are good penalties and there are dumb penalties, and there are, and Cassian takes some of both kinds, you know, you do value the aggression. And maybe that's what the trading partner might value. I understand that new owner in Carolina likes tough players, so he might really go for Zach Cassian. And it's at least that's in hearing the talk. And one suggestion was Cassian in a second round pick, say for Falk. And at least it's a trade that makes sense in that Carolina has three good right-handed defensemen, expensive ones for first, second, and third pairings. Quite aside from Justin Falk, because they now got Dougie Hamilton to go with Brett Pesce and Trevor Van Riemsdyk. So Falk is in some respects, an extra wheel there. I mean, they might work it differently and move out one of the other guys, but Falk seems the obvious one coming off a tough year and with, big money contract still on the books for two more years.
Yeah, he gets paid $6 million a year.
$6 million cash, and they're on a budget. So if they trade him out, they might expect to get a little salary back. Like the question came up today, well, why wouldn't Carolina just go out and sign Alex Chiasson? But the answer is that anytime you see big money moving one way, you always see at least one salary of some description going the other way, and that would maybe fill the bill. It would allow the Oilers to make room for Justin Falk's
captain. And maybe they really want Zach Cassian's toughness. Yeah. I mean, Zach Cassian, let's not forget, like, he was the hero of Edmonton in the San Jose series in 2017. I mean, he was a menace. He was flying around, knocking over players, you know, smashing Logan Couture through the boards. He was Bubba Yaga. He was scaring the hell out of the San Jose Sharks. And that player adds a lot of value to your team. Now, we didn't see that player. No. It's probably hard to get to that level of intensity for Cassian. Right. And it was certainly that kind of player was more penalized, it seemed, last year than in the past as well. They were really throwing the elbowing penalties, the hooking, the slashing penalties at Cassian and other players like that. But Carolina might really want Zach Cassian. Like, I don't if they're looking for an enforcer, I mean, didn't Vegas just pay, was it Vegas, $3 million a year for Ryan Reeves?
Yes.
So, yeah, some teams, if you don't have that guy, I mean, the owners have a plethora of guys. They got Lucic, Darnell Nurse, Jujhar Kara. They've got all kinds of tough guys. So they don't necessarily need a fourth one in Cassian. But if you're Carolina, maybe you really want him. So there's that.
Yeah, well, I can at least see the appeal there. And I mean, his price tag, like when I talk about some salary going the other way, it's not like he's a $4 or $5 million player. He's a $2 million player. So if you're trading $6 million out for $2 million in, from the budget standpoint, that's a big win. And you got to expect to get something. And I mean, they're going to have to get to the cap floor at some point too. I don't know their exact situation, but you can't have no salaries. So they got, I think, some fundamental basis for a possible trade. So I think at least it's, you know, it's not one of these foolish things where you're saying, well, why would this team even consider that? Like, there's an actual case to be made for them to consider it.
So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe it's just all hot air and talk and nothing, but maybe this is going to.
We wouldn't have hot air and talk on this podcast now, would we? I mean, there must be something to it if we're talking about it.
Yeah, we only discuss you know. All righty, let's leave it at that, Bruce. You're going to the game tomorrow, right?
I'm going to the game tomorrow. I'm not sure how many of the guys are. I mean, they have 9 defensemen and 6 playing the game, so maybe tomorrow night, the night they sit Bouchard and Caleb Jones, which would be a very big disappointment for me. On the other hand, they only have 2 extra forwards, so we should expect to see most of the forwards, but... I'm looking forward to seeing them play against a team. You know, it's a level playing field. It's, you know, Oilers prospects against another team's prospects. Happens to be Calgary. It's going to be a full barn. It's sold right out in the Centrium. I understand they're having a day of festivities and stuff down there. So I'd like to think the Oilers will set up their A team and see what they got against the top Flames. And I mean, tonight, just to briefly touch on the game, I mean, we did see another fine game from Caleb Jones. We saw some nice passes from Tyler Benson again. We saw a beauty pass from Cooper Marody. Some nice work from Ryan McLeod. But again, you know, their competition was such that how much do you read into that other than they were, when the chances were there, they made some plays.
Yeah, that's about it. So you kind of covered my entire post. I don't know what I'm going to be writing other than what you just said in that one paragraph.
Well, there you go. Done.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. And I'm not sure I'll be around for a podcast tomorrow because I'll be in Red Deer, but I will catch up later in the week, I'm sure.
All righty. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.